Welcome to the podcast that helps you build wealth and thrive in a world of out-of-control central banks and big governments. This is the Rebel Capitalist Show.
All right, guys, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome someone back to the Rebel Capitalist Show. He is my good buddy, Jason Burrick. Jason, what is going on, my friend? How is it going in the world of stagflate, tax, and lie?
Crazy times as usual, George. it seems that the politicians and the central bankers, they just keep upping the ante on crazy town here.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, you know, one thing I'd love your opinion on, because I know you've got a lot of contacts in China, is just what the heck is going on there with the lockdowns in Shanghai that just make zero sense from a standpoint of health. There's got to be some alternative motivation, let's say. Do you have any insights from your buddies there that are boots on the ground?
Yes, there was enormous food shortages, supply chain problems. So this started, and I was covering this on my channel years ago in 2019. You had the African swine flu there with over 70% of their pork population died, and China was scrambling. This was before the pandemic. They were having a banking crisis back then. Their banks were having enormous problems because their credit bubble in China from 2007, I did a video on this showing all the charts and graphs. I spent over 10 hours going through all the different charts and graphs years ago on my YouTube channel. And from 2007 to 2019, they grew the credit in the Chinese economy from around a trillion or two to over 50 trillion. So right. From 2007, 2019, but they had a food problem starting in 2019. There were bouts of food problems because their central planning, there's so much corruption there. It's kind of Soviet Union level. It's in some cases worse than Soviet Union level corruption and central planning there. And if you pass bad news about crop failures, problems with the wheat crop or the corn crop, other key crops in stable crops in China, if you pass bad news up the chain, in the Chinese Communist Party, bad news leads to bad things for your political career, for your net worth, potentially for your safety, for yourself and your family. So there were all these bad news, agricultural problems for years in China, and the African swine flu was a main one. So things compounded with 2020. There was obviously with the pandemic shutting down and farmers and the restrictions, there was less crops planted. You have higher energy prices. You have supply chain problems, much higher fertilizer prices. Well, China does not grow a lot of their own food. Right. So China has to import tons of it. Now they were importing tons, but then you had the Ukraine, Russia going into Ukraine. And now you have all these protectionist policies from all these governments. They're banning wheat exports. They're banning fertilizer exports. So China, this exacerbated a food problem in China, and they were importing food, but a lot of the food they imported was going bad. So they've had a lot of food problems there with their supply chain, crop failures for years. In certain parts of China, they had flooding. In certain parts of China, they had droughts. I would argue that this is because they've used way too much coal for their power plants. So instead of focusing on natural gas powered electricity generation, or nuclear power plants post-Fukushima, they instead were building for the last couple decades one coal-fired power plant per year that was ruining their air, water, and soil, and that was leading to crop failures, either droughts or flooding in different areas.
So why does that incentivize them to lock down?
Because they were running out of food. so they used like that they're going to eliminate all the variant strains. So they're trying to kill demand for certain commodities. So they don't want to, the Chinese Communist Party doesn't want to admit that they had all these problems with crop failures all these years, right, with building coal-fired power plants. I mean, there's energy shortages in China too. They were scrambling. If you look at videos on China Insights YouTube channel, they're interviewing a lot of these factory owners in China, and they're talking about their energy costs. So people who are talking about deflation here, that's like a global macro type of analysis. They're not doing any bottom up. They're not actually hearing what the factory owners in the factory owners in China who make a lot of the goods, their costs are up like more than double. So all these costs, so energy costs, diesel costs, electricity costs, all these costs are up enormous. Materials costs, all these other materials that go into the manufacturer components out of China, if there's not supply chain problems with actually sourcing the materials, the costs are up enormously.
So this was really a play to just reduce aggregate demand.
Yes, yes. So this was the Chinese Communist Party using a variant strain saying we're going to have a zero tolerance policy on all these virus strains. You don't care if the sensor and stuff like that. So all these virus strains, they're saying we're going to have a zero tolerance policy. We're going to lock it down. The real reason was they were having supply chain problems. They were having food shortages. And this was years of compounding problems with bad central economic planning. This is similar to the Soviet Union in the past lying about how good their grain exports were when they were like stealing them from Ukraine and the Ukrainian people weren't getting any food and dying of starvation. So it was, unfortunately, this is what happens with governments and large scale central planning and corruption. The people in the Chinese Communist Party did not want to pass on bad crop harvests up the chain there. They did not want to pass bad news. This is what happens when government has too much power. This is what happens.
So how is that going to impact the United States and just kind of the average Joe and Jane? We know that the global supply chains are incredibly fragile. And they, you know, prior to COVID, they worked very, very well. But just one little thing going wrong could have this ripple effect to where you just can't get anything. I always use the example of like a Ferrari, right? They work really well. They can go like 220 miles per hour. But one little teeny thing goes wrong in that Ferrari and it's in the shop for 2 weeks and you can't repair it. It's not like a diesel Ford truck that you can just hit it with a sledgehammer and it can run on, you know, French fry oil or whatever it is. It's not very robust. And that's kind of how our supply chains were. So what do you think? How does what's going on in China, how will that impact the US consumer?
Well, actually, I wanted to speak about this more broadly. It's not just China now. We have a new normal now until things change. And this is because of bad global policy, bad energy policy compounding on each other. And food and energy are related. You need a lot of energy to generate calories. So whether you're growing staple crops, whether you're growing cattle, pork, other types of proteins. So energy is directly related in a lot of aspects. I mean, fertilizer, you're using an enormous amount of natural gas or other parts there. And then you're transporting with transportation fuel. Look at the diesel, the enormous diesel problems here in the US. If you can actually find diesel in certain parts of the East Coast. I was speaking with one of my co-hosts of a new show I have on my YouTube channel, and he was picking his daughter up from college in upstate New York. And he said he had to go to 4 or 5 different gas stations just to find diesel, and the prices were sky high.
Really? So yes. Even the places that typically carry diesel were out.
Well, and this is getting into the problem again with, we have the new normal now. For years to come, until policy changes, until the free market is allowed to work, until politicians, bureaucrats, regulators stop with these bad policy. And it's bad policy after bad policy after bad policy compounding on itself. It's not just the US, it's the European Union, many other countries. The US federal government, what they're doing right now, the Biden administration, there's a lot of anecdotal evidence. Oilprice.com, one of the reporters covered this, a number of different articles in the last 6 weeks. The Biden administration, George, is sending U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve oil to the European Union. They are sending diesel to the European Union. They are sending gasoline to the European Union. Americans are not getting the supply that they need. On top of that, you can't build a new refinery here in the United States. We just had the CEO of Chevron come out and say he doesn't think that there's ever going to be a new oil refinery allowed to be built, approved here in the United States. So
we're taking our strategic petroleum reserve, and Biden is saying, oh, we're releasing this to bring down gas prices, which I would assume gas prices are even higher than when he released it. But really, that's going to Europe to subsidize what they aren't receiving from Russia due to the sanctions that we imposed on Russia and basically imposed on ourselves.
Yes, and there's tons of other bad policy examples. So on top of this, they're discussing in many other countries now windfall profits tax on oil and natural gas producers. That won't help supply. You have people in Congress, the Biden administration, talking about requiring more corn ethanol in each gallon of gasoline. That's going to hurt internal combustion engines. So all, and that's taking away, instead of growing corn or other staple crops on arable land. And Doomberg wrote an excellent piece on this. I have to recommend your listeners go and read it if they haven't done so. So we're wasting valuable land where we can grow food on. Instead, it's going to be used for subsidies for votes for farmers. And it's going to be put in fuel tanks, and it's going to ruin our gas, our internal combustion gasoline engines. So all these bad policies are just compounding on each other, whether it's the Department of Energy blocking refineries, governments discussing windfall profits taxes, preventing new supply from coming online. You have the Biden administration, the amount of oil and natural gas leases, blocking pipelines. I could go on and on about. So these are just bad policies compounding on each other. And then they're sending key oil, key gasoline, key diesel outside the United States when Americans need it. Oh, and then on top of that, George, you have these different governments. They're talking, either they've already issued a few of these stimulus checks, or they're already talking about it. They want to give you a rebate to give you cash to go buy more gasoline. Well, they're not fixing the supply problems. They're not allowing the oil refiners. They're not allowing the oil producers and natural gas producers to efficiently grow supply to fix the problem long-term. Instead, they're going to give the consumer, what, 400? I think California was proposing a $400 rebate card or something like some type of debit card. That's not going to help the supply problems. That's going to maintain consumer demand and not allow the market to fix itself with supply and demand where prices meet.
Exactly. Exactly. I've been saying that on my channel. The insanity here is the way you solve a problem of consumer prices going up is with more stuff.
Well, I have
to say, it's not more currency units and less stuff. That just exacerbates the problem.
So I have to say this publicly here. The policies are so bad, and there's so many bad energy policies, and this is spilling over into food. The policies are so bad, they're intentional. They have to be intentional. No one is this dumb. and the people here in the DC metro area, the green energy people, the environmentalists, they're driving $100,000 SUVs like brand new or last couple of years, and they're giving their kids these expensive SUVs. I see them drive around here all the time, every day.
In like a Range Rover or something.
Yeah. Just saw one. Georgetown Law sweatshirt, 2-year-old Range Rover, just graduated from Georgetown Law School. Her parents gave her it as a gift. Just saw that like last week or two.
So where are these bad policies coming from? Because I don't think Biden has the cognitive ability to map out this master game plan here. So is it coming from Klaus? Is it coming from the IMF? Yeah. Where is it coming from?
Well, I call them the Davos crowd.
Right.
I call them the Davos crowd. So they want to, I think the goal here, they're driving up home price. Home prices have been driven up. Rents are now driven up. So if you can't afford a new house, if you're barely able to pay rent, you can't buy a new house. So rents are going through the roof. People are barely able, a lot of people, are barely able to afford the necessities. So now you're going to see in the real economy, ask how this affects the US discretionary income.
Yeah, right.
So if people are paying 50% or more for rent over the last 2 years, their healthcare insurance is going up, their taxes are going up, gasoline's going up, diesel's going up, food, they're getting killed with shrinkflation and higher food prices. So both double whammy there.
Yep.
All these things mean that the corporate earnings for a lot of these companies that are coming out in Q2, Q3, Q4, much higher. The theme is going to be higher energy costs, higher costs, margin compression on a lot of the earnings. The companies are going to try to probably say it's temporary, but it's leading to the consumer having very difficult decisions. And that normally means recession or depression. That normally means less savings, less government tax revenue, and less consumer discretionary income.
So how do we get continued, let me be very careful with my words here. How do we get continued accelerating consumer price inflation as measured by the CPI? We all know that's bogus. But how do we get continued accelerating CPI prints if we have aggregate demand going down because purchasing power is being crushed because real wages are declining?
So I think the main theme here, George, and I'm not sure how they're going to do this with changing the formula, but you're going to see this, and this is the divorce between the changing propaganda index, as I call it, or CPI, and reality. And the reality is what the companies are going to say with their profit margins and their costs going up. I think the theme here going forward, and I'm really worried about this in the next 2 to 5 years, talked about China. If China does come back online, so we're starting to see the ports in Shanghai open, the Chinese government announced that they want to start the factories again, that's going to increase demand for gasoline. That's going to increase demand for diesel. That's going to increase demand for oil and other oil-related products. We're looking at, as bad as energy prices are now, and when we're recording this interview on Friday, June 3rd, 2022, we have West Texas intermediate oil prices around $120 a barrel. Gasoline prices here in the U.S. are averaging, I think they're just under $5 a gallon. So that's a really large disparity between gasoline prices and oil prices. Normally in the past, if the oil price was at these levels, gasoline prices would be nowhere near these levels. But there's a lot of supply chain problems. You also have the gasoline, like I said, that I, in my opinion, there's a lot of anecdotal evidence of this and a couple of reporter stories on oilprice.com. I think it was sent outside the United States that it shouldn't have been. So I think the theme here is going to be much higher oil and energy prices that are going to creep into the, and they've already done this for a while now, but I think it could get worse. My point is here that this is far from over. I don't know if the changing propaganda index will reflect what's going to be happening with higher natural gas prices. There's a new normal. I've been talking about a natural gas bull market on your channel for 2 years. So I was predicting when natural gas was 2 or 3, when it was hated, when all that supply was offline, I was saying new bull market. Now look at all that supply offline, all these electrical power plants and utilities outside of the United States, they're going to want to switch over to natural gas, because I was reading about how they all wanted to transition away from coal and coal supply wasn't as available. So you're starting to see like a new normal. My Cuppy, the hedge fund manager Cuppy, you've interviewed him. He wrote an excellent article about 6 weeks ago on his Adventures in Capitalism blog website. He called it the new normal for commodities and price floors. And I think that's a big part of this, is the cost structure for these businesses, for the consumer. The new normal now are much, much higher prices. So we're not going to be seeing, if we do see like a stock market crash, temporary deflation, I actually think that in the short term, you know, that would be nice for the consumer to have cheaper gasoline prices. But I actually think that that will make supply problems for energy, especially, even worse 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now. So right. I actually think like key investments, because a lot of people don't understand that a lot of these oil and natural gas producers, they have to make big investments ahead of time. And they also have to use a lot of debt or credit. So if there is a drop in credit available, or a credit freeze, or a temporary deflation, and I'm in the camp with Stagflate Tax Slide that we can temporarily have deflation, but it can't last a long time. So
I think we can temporarily have disinflation. Deflation, boy, that would be tough. But it, you know, I can see the CPI, you know, Q3, Q4, and I've said this quite a few times on my videos. I can see it going down, you know, we're at what, 8.3 now? I could see it going down to what, 6, maybe 5.5. I struggle to see it go to -3. You know, now asset prices, that's a different story. We could see them completely collapse. But I think just when you're talking about goods and services.
So we have something right now. I've been labeling it the reverse wealth effect.
Yeah, totally.
It's actually the worst case scenario for the Fed, because remember, prior to the pandemic, for years, the Fed was saying there's not enough inflation. They were talking about publicly. Yeah, Janet Yellen. Yeah, go back and look up. They won't want to talk about this now. But for years, like, look up the old Janet Yellen speeches and interviews. She was talking about how the wealth effect was good. There wasn't enough inflation.
Oh, yeah. And we're never going to have another recession for the rest of our lives. Jason, remember when she said that?
Yes. Yep. And she's been proven right. The Fed and all of her public comments have been proven wrong. The one who's actually been the most honest out of the Fed was Greenspan. Now that Greenspan was predicting stagflation, really bad stagflation, for the last 3 or 4 years. So I guess since he had been retired for a while, he didn't care anymore. And he was like, yeah, there's going to be really bad stagflation. Then we had Lloyd Blankfein, former CEO of Goldman Sachs, in early 2020. He was like, yeah, there's going to be really bad inflation and commodities are going to rip. He was predicting that in early 2020. So like the new normal now is much higher price floors for commodities going forward because of all the lack of supply chain investments. Yes, maybe in the short term with some policy decisions or a temporary bout of deflation for a short amount of time. But look at the policy, what the governments have decided. They will hand out checks. They will hand out new stimmy checks. They will hand out gas rebate checks. They're trying to prevent the free market from fixing. They're trying to maintain demand levels. They won't allow the markets to clear.
Do you think, because the government's in a difficult bind where inflation is a very hot topic, no pun intended, but I think, you know, you've got Russia, Ukraine, and all the media is getting fixated on that. They're trying to use this propaganda spin. The average Joe cares a lot more about the prices he's paying at the grocery store or she's paying at the gas pump, something like that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that the government can come out and say, hey, we're going to give everyone stimmy checks, because then this seems, or the media will say, oh, well, this is inflationary. Then the average Joe will get pissed off. What do you think about them effectively giving stimmy checks through a debt jubilee? Because then they can give the people the purchasing power to buy the votes, but they're not spending any more dollars. So, or at least that's how they'd spin it, right?
So they have to wait until the dollar index rallies and gets too strong, or they have to wait for actual deflation where asset prices are collapsing even more than now and consumer prices are falling. They have to wait for evidence of that. And then that's when they can come in and they have the justification they need. All the PhD economists that all have overpriced jobs and consulting gigs making six figures here in the DC metro area and New York City, that's when they can come in and advise the politicians to issue out the checks in Congress. The Republicans and Democrats, because they're basically both Keynesians, both parties are in favor of central banking, either tax and spend or borrow and tax and spend, both but, parties.
Or what I'm saying though is give the consumer a debt jubilee, like just wipe out student loan debt, because then the politicians can say, hey, we're increasing aggregate demand in the, you know, in their own words, we're increasing aggregate demand, but yet we're not spending any more money. We're not adding to the deficit.
So the problem with a debt jubilee, and they have to figure this out, is that the debt is an asset to the banks and other investors who are loaning out.
The government, it's their largest asset on their balance sheet.
Well, the government also wants inflation too. So the Fed is making money off the bonds they buy and then supposedly remitting them to the Treasury or supposedly reinvesting them into buying other bonds. But in terms of a debt jubilee though,
well, I'm just talking about like student loan debt or maybe credit card debt. Well, I guess it could just be student loan debt, because that's what's on the balance sheet of the government.
So there's so many complications with that because of who owns it. The question then is who owns the debt? So the banks, and when a bank gives out a loan, that's an asset on their balance sheet. So the bank wants to get the loan paid back with interest. So it's a liability to the person paying off the loan, but then it's also an asset. So then the government, then what are they going to just give the banks the cash then?
No, but I think a lot of that debt is on the balance sheet of the government as an asset. I think that the two parties involved there are the liability of the student, and the asset is the loan, and it's on the government's balance sheet. Yeah, I believe I'm 90% sure, not 100% sure.
I'm obviously not 100% sure how a debt jubilee would work out. I don't think it's the most likely outcome right now. We'll have to see what they want. They like people in the problem right now, and why they can't do a ton more inflationary policy, is too many people have woken up to inflation. Inflation is too high. So more regular people who are not attuned to inflation, they're searching Google for it. They're understanding it. They're prepping for it. They're adjusting their lives for it. Companies are talking about inflation. They're talking about their margins compressing. You have all these small business owners either raising prices or they have supply chain problems. So all these, the inflation is a hot word right now. Stagflation tax lie though is the middle ground. I've always said this for years. It's the middle ground between, and I view things as a gauge on one side of the gauge. So I think the inflation deflation camp, I disagree with them on a lot of stuff. I agree with them on some and disagree with them on a lot. But I've interviewed a lot of these guys. I've listened to a lot of their speeches, and I've read their books over the years. I view things as a gauge. So you have hyperinflation on one side and you have deflation on the other, and everything else in between are different degrees of stagflation. And really all the Fed can do is they're kind of like the, they're very bad worker Keebler elves. And all they can do is kind of, like lie in public and then try to move the gauge back one way or another, so it doesn't get to hyperinflation with whatever they can, either lying in public or policy decisions, like claiming they're going to reduce the balance sheet when in reality, George, in the last month, and we just found this out from someone digging in, that $230 billion and more assets were actually moved off balance sheet. They bought another $230 billion and public, the Fed claimed that their balance sheet is down a little bit.
Yeah, right.
They were buying mortgage-backed securities, commercial real estate mortgage-backed securities, God knows what else, sticking it off balance sheet into special purpose vehicles. They're legally allowed to do it. So all they can do is just move things back from one direction to the other on this gauge between hyperinflation and deflation, because they don't want either outcome. In a deflationary outcome, what the average person and a lot of financial professionals don't talk about, the history of deflation and why the real reasons for quantitative easing. In my opinion, now that we're post 2008 financial crisis and we've seen all the craziness that has gone on with the rules changes and stuff and why the Fed does QE, the Fed's mandates are a lie. The real reason, in my opinion, the real reason that they do quantitative easing are for bailouts, number one, inflating asset price, hidden bailouts for large banks, large corporations, and hedge funds and family offices. So financial industry, large corporations, banks, bailouts, covert bailouts, and then they can move things off balance sheet or whatever, all the different liquidity program bailouts, they create new ones. They want to inflate asset prices with the wealth effect because they need the taxes. They need that. They need the, in a recession or depression, income taxes fall. You have capital gains taxes fall. You have property taxes fall. The consumer's not going out to eat at restaurants. The consumer's not shopping. So all those state and local tax receipts are all collapsing. Historically, in a recession or depression, when we have an official one, that means more people are filing for unemployment, more people are asking for social programs. That means the government's spending more, George.
And getting less.
And that means the government has to spend more and tax revenues are collapsing. So that's a worst case scenario for the Fed. That's like the that's as bad or worse than the reverse wealth effect. I didn't explain the reverse wealth effect. The reverse wealth effect is where asset prices fall or keep falling and consumer prices, it's obvious that we have stagflation and shrinkflation and it's getting worse. So that's what the Fed has said it has not wanted for 20 or 30 years.
Do you think?
And then the third reason for quantitative easing is to fund the government. They have to fund all levels of the government. So if there is tax revenue shortfalls for income tax, property tax, state and local governments, QE fills those holes.
Yeah, yeah, because they can buy the bonds theoretically without
Treasury. They buy treasury bonds. Jerome Powell was front running all the municipal bond purchases. He got in trouble for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I meant to say without the yield going up. Hey guys, I want to remind you to get your tickets to Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the live conference I do twice per year with all of your favorite speakers from the Rebel Capitalist Show and experts in investing, commodities, real estate, freedom, and liberty. All of your favorite topics, all of your favorite speakers. The next Rebel Capitalist Live is going to be in Miami, and tickets increase in price as we get closer to the event. So go to rebelcapitalistlive.com right now to get your tickets to the next Rebel Capitalist Live. It's the conference you cannot afford to miss. It'll help you increase your financial freedom and, more importantly, your personal freedom. You'll get intel that you won't hear anywhere else. Past speakers have included icons in macroeconomics, investing, and personal freedom and liberty. People like Dr. Ron Paul, Robert Kiyosaki, Brent Johnson, Lynn Alden, Jeff Snyder, Richard Werner, Mark Moss, Lynette Zhang, and Robert Breedlove, just to name a few. So once again, go to Rebel Capitalist Live right now and get your tickets today. Do you think their game plan is to try to combat CPR, at least get it down to a level where it's more politically palatable by talking down the markets because they realize they can't take Fed funds up to a normal level, let's say 4%, 5% that you'd see historically. They can't pull a Paul Volcker because they know that's going to completely crush the economy, the stock market, the housing market, because the debts are so high. So they're thinking to themselves, well, we'll just try to creep up, you know, 25 basis points, 75 basis points, maybe 1%, while talking really tough to bring down the asset prices to create that negative wealth effect, to your point, to try to bring that CPI down to, let's just say, 6%. So at least if it's going from 8.3 to 7 to 6.7, the politicians can come out and say that, oh, look at this, we're doing something. Look at how awesome we are. We're bringing inflation down by all of our, you know, all of our clever policies. So go ahead and vote for us. Do you think that's kind of the game plan?
Yeah, I think that is a game plan. But what the Fed is also doing there, and we've seen this in the last couple of weeks. I mean, so junk bonds were very close. High yield spreads, junk bonds were very close to blowing out. They were getting real bad. Things were getting ugly about 3 weeks, 4 weeks ago. And then miraculously, something comes in and starts buying them.
Right.
And I've been doing this now for almost 15 years, George. The rules have changed. We find out maybe 2 years now with Dodd-Frank, and we found this out back in December. We started getting information on a blog website that was going through Dodd-Frank disclosures from the New York Federal Reserve Bank. And that's probably the only good thing from Dodd-Frank, is that the New York Fed has to disclose some information about like some of their asset purchases or what they've been doing. We find out all these secret covert bailouts. So we found out that in 2019, during the repo madness crisis, that the Fed had to supply $4 trillion, give or take, to Nomura Securities, this Japanese investment bank. They're not very large, but they wanted to go play in the derivatives market, and they wanted to borrow and repo and leverage up their bets on bonds and currencies and over-the-counter derivatives, enormous trades. And then when the Fed was hiking rates in that rate hiking cycle, their trades blew up and their margin calls were enormous and they got caught with their pants down. And so the Fed had to come in and bail them out. So $4 trillion there, we found out more disclosures coming out too from the New York Fed about early 2020. We found out that European investment banks, some of the French investment banks, the large ones and some other ones, were getting $2 trillion, $3 trillion. It's the whole thing is it's all fiat currency. The Fed, my point here is the Fed. So what you said is the Fed wants consumer prices to come down and then they can help out the politicians. But what the Fed is doing, my point here, is that the Fed is secretly making sure nothing crashes. The Fed is doing all, pulling all these levers, plunge protection team, exchange stabilization fund. We don't know exactly which program. And there's more than one plunge protection team. Dr. Pippa Malmgren, I've interviewed her. She was on two different plunge protection teams. She said one was just academic and they didn't really do anything. They just discussed theoretical stuff. Jim Rickards has discussed this publicly too about multiple plunge protection teams. There's so many of these different things going on behind the scenes. And this is what prevents these markets from collapsing. The new one now is the Archegos stuff, Credit Suisse. Did you see that this week? Credit Suisse said they have to do emergency capital raises. Now, my opinion from discussions with hedge fund contacts and others, early last year, we had Archegos. They supposedly had borrowed over $30 billion to put on leveraged hedge fund trades, their family office, from Credit Suisse. From speaking with other hedge fund contacts, I was told that there were other hedge funds and other family offices that had borrowed similar amounts of capital, tens of billions of dollars, from Credit Suisse and other investment banks, and that Credit Suisse last year only wrote off about $5 billion of the bad debt. So we don't know, because they're not going to be honest with us. The banks in early 2020, in March of 2009, the FASB changed the accounting laws for the banks. You don't hear people talk about this publicly anymore because it's bad. It's a faux pas. They don't have to mark to market their accounting anymore for the large banks. The large U.S. banks, so if you're a foreign investment bank and you have a U.S. branch, you can do all your business and bailouts here with your U.S. holding company and subsidiary and get your bailouts here with the Fed. Dock it here. But they've gone away with so much accounting fraud, so much hidden stuff off balance sheet, The Fed has done tons of covert bailouts. I suspect that the Fed bought a lot of that bad debt from Credit Suisse and prevented problems with not, it wasn't just Archegos, because the financial media talked about Archegos for all of like 2 or 3 weeks. So this is the point here, is that the consumer prices, okay, they come down. But what your listeners need to understand is the Fed's doing way, way worse off balance sheet. I mean, there could be tens of trillions of hidden purchases off balance sheet.
Yeah, so they're artificially propping up the market with all these accounting shenanigans and off balance sheet and stuff with all these banks out in the euro dollar system, call it.
And, yes.
Because if you're a politician, you know, Biden met with Powell and Janet Yellen the other day. And you know damn well that the conversation with Biden is, hey guys, you need to do something about inflation, because we're coming into midterms and I'm the most unpopular president in human history. And if inflation doesn't come down, at least as measured by the CPI, I'm screwed. So how does that work out? Because the Fed knows they can't crash the market. They're, to your point, maybe artificially propping it up with all these shenanigans. What there's still a dynamic there and a very powerful force that at least wants CPI to come down. So there's a possibility of these politicians being reelected. So how do they do that with everything that you're talking about with the Fed and off balance sheet?
I think they're going to probably let asset prices maybe go down a little bit more. The problem is so many of these asset prices are being held with tons of debt. So these things are, there's tons of collateral, there's tons of margin. So these are margin calls. So I don't know how much more they can let asset prices fall.
So they're trying to do this soft landing and just bring things down in an orderly fashion. But there's so much risk in the system because it's so levered that they're, although they may have good intentions, it's not like just dialing the thermostat on your air conditioner. They could get to 70, they could go from 71 degrees to 70, and all of a sudden the AC takes it straight down to 50 degrees.
Well, the Fed also, their biggest enemy now is not just people waking up to a stagflation, it's also math.
Yeah.
And the math is interest payments on the national debt. So you have all these talking heads on Wall Street talking about the Fed has to keep raising rates. The Fed has raised, and I'll admit this, the Fed has raised rates more than I thought they could. But if the more they raise rates, George, the more they're going to break things. Okay.
Right.
So they're going to break the real economy. They're going to break all of these margined over leveraged trades. So all of these hedge funds and family offices and people trading on margin accounts. So their stocks are going to fall. They're going to get margin calls. This is going to create a vicious cycle. And then this is going to cause problems with government tax revenues. But the Fed is facing a math problem because of interest payments on the national debt too. So they can't continue to keep raising rates, because if you look at the math, so the average interest payment, so we have national debt now over 30 trillion.
Yeah.
A 1% increase in interest rates, and all of the bonds being issued are not, some of them are old, some of them are going to be rolled over. They're not going to be paid off. So the US government doesn't care about paying off the national debt. No one here cares about that. It's all about how easy can the interest payments be paid off, and what percentage of the tax revenues, the annual tax receipts, is interest payments on the debt. Mm-hmm. So that's all that really matters. That's when the Fed panics. That's when the Fed decides that we have to come in here, we have to fund government, we have to knock interest rates back down, we have to do yield curve control. That's when the Fed panics, when the interest expense on the national debt gets too much, and the debt is still growing. So hear all this narrative about, okay, the Fed ended QE in March. I've already said that there's a lot of anecdotal evidence that that's not true. They're moving it off balance sheet. They're doing at least $230 billion a month and moving it off balance sheet. They did that for the month of May. And then their official balance sheet is dropping. So as interest rates at 3%, George, so if they did allow the entire yield curve, let's say they move Fed funds rate, the short-term part of the curve, they move that up to 3%. They allowed the rest of the yield curve to do that. And they started issuing new bonds at those levels in the next 18 to 24 months. And there's a lot of debt, George, that needs to get rolled over.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Grohman was saying they roll over like something like $10 trillion a year.
Just in the next 18 months, there's at least $6 trillion that has to get rolled over.
Yeah.
And the other part of that is there's not a lot of foreign demand. So the normal purchasers of U.S. treasuries were, in the past, it was China. In the past, it was Russia. In the past, it was Japan. Japan was the largest holder officially of U.S. treasuries of any government. Those are not the normal buyers now because they're all having economic problems. Japan, they're
going to cross Russia off the list.
Of course. And China, and I've been talking about this on your channel for longer than anyone, China decided as a matter of policy, they didn't want to buy a lot more U.S. treasuries years ago. They decided that they'd rather just build new warehouses and put copper there. Or they'd rather build another strategic petroleum reserve and fill it with oil. I think they have six now.
Probably a wise decision.
Well, the copper might get a little rusty and you could probably clean it off and treat it, but it won't go to zero.
Yeah. What do you think about us being, or the world being, in a long-term commodity super cycle?
It will be very volatile. So I agree with Cuppy that there's a new normal, and the cost structure, especially for building a new mine, new oil and gas wells, the cost structure, there's lack of personnel, there's a shortage of steel pipe for building new oil and gas wells. There's enormous problems on the supply side. So if the free market was allowed to make investments and didn't have all these government restrictions and supply chain problems, it wouldn't be as big of an issue. But as I've discussed in past interviews, a lot of the oil and natural gas reserves globally are held by governments and these national oil companies, and they're not very good at reinvesting oil profits back into their oil business. They are, over the last like couple decades, they've used more and more of their oil and natural gas profits to fund all different types of their governments and for social program spending.
Yeah.
So that has starved their national oil companies of capital.
Yeah. And, in the West, you're doing a Elizabeth Warren profit tax, or whatever she's calling it, windfall profit tax, which reduces the amount of capital they have to allocate to creating more supply in the future.
Well, there's other governments that are discussing this. Windfall profits have either implemented them or will, they've either already implemented them or they're discussing right now. So this is a big, big problem. Now, this doesn't mean that commodity prices are going to go straight up, but it means that we're going to have a new normal. As I said earlier in the interview, $2 to $3 natural gas here in the U.S., those days are basically over. That natural gas was at a loss. There was tons of shale natural gas byproduct that was just flared off. It wasn't put in a storage tank. We didn't have the liquefied natural gas facilities to export it. There's going to be more, as the U.S. exports more liquefied natural gas, the domestic prices will have a new normal, a new higher price floor. That's just how things are. And when energy, and the energy is so important for food and many other businesses, the energy costs for manufacturing, that if there's a higher energy price, and this is what I'm worried about too, a key theme here, George, in the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years, we could see unbelievable amounts of volatility in oil, where maybe in the short term, the oil price, and I don't think it's 100% guaranteed that the oil price goes down, because the OPEC data that came out, I wrote an article on this for my patrons over the last weekend, where 2 million barrels per day, the OPEC and OPEC plus countries missed their production quotas. So OPEC, even though they raised how much oil they could produce, they missed it by another 2 million barrels.
Right.
So they're not hitting their numbers. So the this is why you have oil prices, despite the bad economic data and inflation and companies announcing bad earnings. This is why you have the market worried and China's coming back online. So the market is saying that more demands, even though the consumer here in the U.S. is dealing with high gasoline prices and that might destroy some demand, the market is saying that Chinese demand is going to offset some of that. And then also the market's looking at OPEC data and saying OPEC's not increasing their oil production like they said they would. And they haven't. They haven't in for the last 8 months. Yeah. They've missed production quotas.
So
we may see, George, we may see, I really hope I'm wrong about this, but I know a lot of people like Josh Brown, who's an oil hedge fund manager, and Cuppy, they think we're going in the next couple of years. And a lot of it's because of bad policy from all these different governments, bad energy policy. 250 oil or higher.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris McIntosh has talked, I don't know if that high, but he's talked about prices going up significantly. Eric Townsend talked about prices going up significantly as well. And those guys are sharp cookies for sure.
Well, that will, in that scenario, the consumer would have to spend more of their income on food, energy, rent, you know, the necessities. So this is, you're seeing this now in the data that the consumer is strapped, their savings are crashing, and they're cutting back. So this is why Netflix has a busted business model now. You're seeing a lot, they can't keep raising prices. They have too much competition and the consumers, there's a lot of reasons why Netflix has a busted business model. I was early on this. I wrote an article on this 2 years ago, how Netflix would eventually have a busted business model. Yeah, but now we're starting.
I think if I had to be in the stock market right now, I would just make sure that I owned stuff that people need, not stuff that people wanted. So you don't need Netflix. You need food. You need energy. And, you know, Zoltan, I don't know if you read his paper on it or his interview, but he said it very well, that the last couple crises that we've had in the United States or globally, the central banks can kick the can down the road by just producing more liquidity, money printing, whatever you want to call it, or just expectations policy, changing the rules, off balance sheet stuff, printing bank reserves. But they can't print food. They can't print shelter. They can't print energy. They can't print stuff. So if you have a crisis of stuff instead of a economic or a financial crisis, that's a whole different ballgame. And that's the world we're in right now.
So higher food prices, higher energy prices, gasoline, diesel shortages, supply chain problems. If you're a small business owner, I haven't met a small business owner in the last 18 months who hasn't told me that their costs aren't going up. Pretty much across the board, 10%, 15, 20, sometimes even higher costs. It's a new normal of higher cost structure. And this is on top of governments in a lot of areas wanting to raise taxes.
Yeah.
So trying to pass on higher costs to the customer is going to be a big, big challenge, especially when people have this declining consumer discretionary budgets, George. But yes, I agree with you that owning food, having access to food, energy, industrial metals, these things, it's a question of the right price, what company you're buying it at, if you're buying it at, or you're buying like an ETF, a basket of these stocks.
I'm definitely not saying indiscriminately buy. I was just saying, if I had to put money to work right now, you know, what would I do? Not saying that that's optimal by any stretch.
Well, I think owning commodities is shorting central bank policy, because the policies are so bad from governments and central banks that commodities are going to do very, very well. Even if there's a slight drop in demand, the supply side problems for a lot of these commodities are that bad.
That, I think, is very profound. That it's like shorting central banks, central planners, and the global elite by owning commodities.
Well, I mean, that's what China's doing as their policy. So instead of buying U.S. treasuries, what China has decided to do with their trade surpluses is they want to just keep building warehouses and put nickel in there. They want to keep building warehouses and put more copper. And we don't know the exact amount of warehouses that they have of industrial metals, base metals. They say they have 5 or 6 strategic petroleum reserves, but they can keep building more if they want. So this is it's a long-term strategy, though. It's not a short-term strategy.
Yeah.
But the problem with commodities, though, that a lot of your investors who are new to this is the volatility. So a lot of these futures contracts, there's a lot of leverage involved, and you can have a lot of volatility in commodity prices. So if your listeners are not familiar with that, you could have very volatile moves in a lot of these commodities. We've had in these fertilizer stocks, the potash and other fertilizer stocks, the potash price temporarily dropped. I mean, we're just seeing story after story after story of countries banning wheat exports, banning fertilizer exports, higher food prices, shrinkflation, supply chain problems in food. This problem is not going away. Even if fertilizer prices over the short term in the last like 6 weeks, they dropped 30 to 50%. My gut here is that over the next 2 or 3 years, these prices are going higher because food prices are going higher. And guess what? Crop yields are falling, George. And then if the politicians are going to force more corn ethanol into your each gallon of gasoline here in the United States, that's less land that's being used to grow food.
Yeah. So maybe by buying commodities, you're actually going long the insanity of the politicians. Maybe if you're bullish on politician insanity, then buy commodities.
Well, your show is politically incorrect. We're giving them the finger.
Yeah, there you go. There you go, buddy. You and me both. Well said. All right, man. Well, for the viewers and listeners who want to find out more about what you do, where can they go? Tell them about your Patreon. And it sounds like you got a new show on YouTube. That sounds really cool.
Yeah, I have a new show on my YouTube channel. It's called Finance Unspun. We're trying to do it once or twice a month where we go through some more complex global macro topics. I think the next show in the next week or so is going to be about the oil market. And we're going to go through these bad policies. We're going to try to go through one by one. The policies in the oil and energy markets are so atrocious. Again, as I said earlier in the interview, they are so bad, they have to be intentional. part of the Davos crowd who wants to depopulate.
Yeah, and the channel's Wall Street for Main Street, right?
Yep, and we have almost 50,000 subscribers. We just crossed 9 million views. I've been doing this for a very long time, over a decade, and my Patreon is only $5 a month. I want people to have access to really high quality information about global macro companies and sectors. Over the last 6 months, two of the gold stocks that actually got bought out. So I was writing how undervalued and quality assets they were. The companies were still making good money. They were low cost producers with quality assets. They just got bought out. So the gold stocks in general right now are down a little bit, but the gold stocks are not doing superbly well lately, but I suspect that as the Fed announces that they can't increase interest rates that much more, and as things get worse with more volatility in asset prices, I think gold will rebound. But the other commodities like uranium, oil, natural gas, the fertilizer and potash stocks, these things, in my opinion, are all in a long-term bull market. There are severe food and energy problems. It's going to be a major theme for at least the next 5 years. It's not going away because we have too many problems with politicians, bureaucrats, regulators preventing the free market capitalism from fixing supply chain problems and investment on the supply side.
Yeah. So guys, I cannot recommend Jason's Patreon enough. It's how do they find that? Do they just go to Patreon and put in your name or Wall Street for Main Street? How do they find it?
Okay. So there's over 200 articles there on a lot of interesting topics. So there's a lot of content there behind the paywall. And again, it's only $5 a month, and it's patreon.com/Wall Street for Main Street, WLLSTFRMAINST.
Okay. Awesome, man. As always, appreciate the time. Awesome conversation. Can't wait to do it again, my friend.
It was fun as usual, George. Hopefully some of my politically incorrect comments won't get this video censored or demonetized.
No. We'll continue to give him the finger. All right, have a good one.
Hello, fellow Rebel Capitalists. Do you enjoy watching these interviews I do for the Rebel Capitalist show? Well, if so, you would absolutely love Rebel Capitalist Live. This is the conference I do twice per year, and we've had speakers like Robert Kiyosaki, Lynn Alden, Rick Rule, Jeff Snyder, and Dr. Ron Paul, just to name a few. So go to rebelcapitalistlive.com and check out the next event we have scheduled in Miami.
Thank you for listening to the Rebel Capitalist Show. For more content like this, check out the Rebel Capitalist blog at georgegammon.com or go to the George Gammon YouTube channel.